Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. The transfer window is slamming shut, so I've got Mark Cooper to don his golden yellow dress. I'm fastening up my golden yellow tie, and we're going to discuss Celtic signings and where we are to date.
You're a space raider that passes sideways.
First up, we have the new music, and today's music is brought to us by Unpaid Intern. They were introduced to us by their brother, Mike Meehaw Wood, who you may recall gave us podcast recommendations earlier, and there'll be more podcast recommendations at the end of this one. But Unpaid Intern, the band, and the music playing in the background is World Cup of Crisps, and playing out will be myself being a telepath. Yip indeedy. Anyway, it's Mark Cooper and I discussing the August transfer window closing tonight as we're recording this. Celtic have made some excellent signings. We've had Sinclair, because if his name was Sinclair, it'd be spelled S-T-C-L-A-I-R as in Isla. Anyway, Sinclair, Dembele, Ayer, Touré, and Christian Gamboa, and of course, who are we signing tonight? But before we discuss all of that, there is the work of the Celtic FC Foundation. Celtic FC Foundation, or the Celtic charity side of things, was only brought back into practice by Fergus McCann following his takeover in 94. And the work that the foundation do is absolutely fantastic. If you get yourself over to the Celtic FC Foundation website, you'll get to find out things like the planned huddle up Mount Errigal in Donegal on Saturday, September the 3rd. There is also the Sleepout 2016, which anybody wishing to participate in, all that you need to do is raise a minimum of £125, and it will go towards the Celtic FC Foundation Christmas Appeal, which every year helps a small group of families who are in urgent need. And it's taking place on Saturday, November the 12th at Celtic Park from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. You sleep out, well, not quite out, you're in the main stand for health and safety reasons, but you're certainly not indoors, and it's to raise awareness of some of the challenges that affects people around Christmas time, and particularly homelessness, which in the winter time is not a fantastic place to be in your life. That's fallen on from the many Celtic FC Foundation events that have already taken place this year, such as the Zip Slide. And if you want to do anything for the Celtic FC Foundation, you can. If you email them and ask how you can work with them to raise money, there's as part of the Christmas Appeal, there's also the Girls for Good, and there'll be many forthcoming events getting launched by them in the new year. Anyway, enough of me. Mark Cooper and I are talking transfer window and how the team's playing top of the league with a game in hand. At the end of our chat, I'll give you some more podcast recommendations that you guys have been sending in. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper. So I'm joined by Mark Cooper. He's wearing his yellow sort of golden dress. You look very fetching there, Mark.
Thank you very much.
I've got my tie on, because obviously we knew it'd be a big transfer window.
So I'm in Argentina, so what's happened?
We've signed...
Did you get a Brazilian?
We've signed three Brazilians, an Argentinian,
At last, good stuff.
And we've managed to ship out all the dead wood, so Brendan's working with a first team squad of just 18.
That's ideal.
You know, I was actually just thinking just before we came on that, that under Ronnie Dyla, Neil Lennon and Gordon Strachan, people used to bemoan the fact that why do they keep signing midfielders? They just keep signing midfielders. We've got too many midfielders. And the whinge at this transfer window is, why have you not signed any midfielders?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I was just going through the squad there, trying to do a bit of research before I came on here.
Can't have that. You're off.
I know, but there's a mistake already. And how many midfielders have we got just now? Well, five defensive midfielders, attacking midfielders, another nine. And that's with Mulgrew, Allen and Johansson gone.
Yeah, well, so that's the big bugbear of everybody. We haven't signed a midfielder. So who are these midfielders you're talking about?
Well, Ayer's coming. So he'll be a project. Then defensive midfield, Brown, Beaton, Henderson, McGregor. More attacking, Forrest, Roberts, Rodgers, Christie, Armstrong, Commons, Mackay, Stephen, and Sinclair, if we include him as the kind of high left player. If you're to say, is the squad better now than it was at the start of the transfer window? Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, there's an improvement. There's an improvement with Stokes and Skepovic going, Dembele coming in. I think over the next 3 years, Dembele, we'll see that Dembele is going to be an improvement. Sinclair, well, we haven't really had anyone for maybe about 4 years or something who's been a really effective guy on the left-hand side. Samaras was really good there, but you know, he's a kind of converted striker into that high left position in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had anyone who's kind of the equivalent of Forrest on the right hand side. It's always been slightly lopsided. And at the back, well, we brought in one centre back and he's now our best centre back. We brought in a keeper to complement our three other keepers and he's probably going to be a starting goalkeeper. And then Gamboa as a right back as well.
So in total, I think, you know, it's been a pretty decent transfer window.
Yeah, I mean, there's one of the things as we're talking, just I've got Sky Sports News on in the background, and there's two things have struck me in the last half hour or so. It's 10 o'clock as we record this, so there's an hour left in the transfer window. Two things have struck me. They keep going
to... So there's still a chance?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
They keep going to places and saying, so breaking news, yes, the breaking news, and more or less what they're saying is, yeah, the breaking news is what we found out at midday today has happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually not...
Yeah,
that much happening at the last minute.
Is that the same in England as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, they're going to breaking news. Jack Wilshere has completed his signing to Bournemouth that we found out about 4 hours ago.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of that, and there's a bit of me. There's a bit of me sees the final day of the transfer window actually as the final sales day for Sky to push Sky subscribers for the season.
Yeah.
Also, people complained they want us to sign people, and why don't we sign all our players before we qualify for the Champions League? So the club could justifiably turn around and say, Rome wasn't built in a day. We're not going to buy 11 first-team players in one transfer window. We have bought 6 players, 5 of whom are first-team starters, and we would like to think that Ayer might be pushing for being a first-team starter after 3 months. In the same way that I remember the guy behind me going nuts, the debut of Wanyama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Wanyama was in and out of the team for the first 3 months, and he was bemoaning that we needed to sign people who could hit the first team running, and enough of this project stuff with people like Wanyama.
Yeah, yeah.
So, equally, I went after the Champions League qualifiers. I wanted us to sign a better, have better players, at least one better player in the middle of the park.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I'm still wanting us to have one better player in the middle of the park.
Yeah,
it's a weird situation in midfield. Because you alluded to it earlier, is that everyone wants that. And yet, that's the most congested part of the pitch. It's probably where we spent most of our money. There's the Armstrong, Collins, Mackay, Stevenson, Clare, you know, Roberts, Forth, blah, blah, blah. There's so many players there that surely we had to, if we're going to be bringing in, you know, more players, we had to get rid of about 2, 3, 4 of those guys.
And I do wonder whether part of the issue in terms of not bringing even more players in is that we haven't cleared enough out.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a debate over last night and this morning with a guy who said he doubted, because he said we hadn't spent money. And at this point, we were selling Simonovic.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, it's terrible that we're not spending any money. Now, my calculation was Sinclair at 4, Gamboa at 1 is 5, Ayer was 800 grand, so that's 5.8,
yeah,
and Dembele was £500,000, so that's 6.3,
yeah.
Coming in was, at that point, Johansson at 2, Simonovic at 3.2, so that was 5.2, and I can't really think of anyone else that we got money in.
Maybe Stepovic.
Maybe. But more or less, I looked at it as pretty much break even, and I then said, yeah, but by the time you factor in, I wouldn't be surprised if Toure and Dembele and Sinclair were somewhere between £500,000 and £1 million signing on fee.
Mm-hmm.
And then that their wages are 25 to 30 grand a week. In fact, I've heard that Dembele's wages are 32 grand a week. Well, if Johansson was on the same as his mate Van Dijk, he was on 8 grand a week.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need to sell 4 Johanssons to account for the wage bill of 1 Dembele. And I suspect part of our problem was we didn't get enough people out the door.
Yeah, yeah. There's also another thing that a problem with having a strategy of buying so many young players, that if you have them concentrated in like a few positions, they're not going to increase in value because there's not enough minutes for them to play and improve and, you know, become more valuable. Even if one or two are playing in that position, say Armstrong and Mackay Stephen are there, then inevitably Christie is going to lose value, Rodgers is going to lose value. And it seems to me like when we had that plethora of strikers that we've had over the past, say, 4 years or something,
mm-hmm.
where there's something, we signed something like 18 to 19 centre-forwards. And of course, in the last 6 months, we've also got rid of, apart from Stokes, Skepovic, also got rid of Kazim Richards and Carlton Cole as well.
Mm-hmm.
So then a player like Skepovic, where say we bought him for 2 and maybe sold him for 1 or something like that.
Yep.
Well, Skepovic didn't play because there were always about 4 or 5 strikers in front of him.
And that's also the thing, was that there was a debate someone was having last night about wanting, you know, more strikers. And now it looks to me like pretty much Brendan Rodgers is going to play a variant of a 4-2, which morphs into a 3 at the back, and a 1 uh-huh. morphs into a 3 up front. But basically, yeah. one central guy that you would class as a striker. So that's Griffiths or Dembele. Yeah. And the guy said, oh, we need somebody else because Chief G is useless. Well, you need Griffiths to be injured, Dembele to be injured before you get to Chiefchi.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we've seen already, if you are playing the one up front and Griffiths is playing most weeks and he plays for 60 minutes and then Dembele plays for 30 minutes, you're either going to then bring somebody in who you're going to have to spend a fortune on because he's better than both Griffiths or Dembele, or you're bringing somebody in who's worse than the two of them.
Because yeah.
somebody who's on a par with them is not going to come to them be a third choice striker.
Yeah.
So, getting back to your point of minutes on the park with Skepovic, I mean, I suppose one of the biggest criticism you can maybe level is we've managed to clear out none of the deadwood. So Commons is there. Ambrose is still, you know, in terms of people that we know are not going to be part of Brendan Rodgers' plans. Commons yeah. is still there. Effie's still there.
Mackay Stephen.
Yeah. Looks like Armstrong starting to slip down the pecking order behind people.
Yeah. And even that guy's point about having another striker, like, maybe that's fair enough, but you have to get rid of Shifty before you can do that, really.
Yeah. And then the other point is, if you don't get rid of them, you've then got unhappy people kicking about the dressing room. You're a man who knows how football dealings work. What do you make of Simonovic? It was off. It was agreed in the middle of August and off on the 18th of August. It was back on again yesterday, back on again today, to the point where he went across. Then you heard that he'd failed a medical. Then you were told that he'd passed the medical. And even up until an hour ago, people were saying it could still be on.
Well, even the deal to bring him in was slightly, like, the price, the quoted price, it seemed to be on the Dynamo website, what, a year ago,
was that, maybe I'm wrong here, but I seem to recall it was something like 3.5 with add-ons, possibly going up to like 5.
Yep.
Which seemed exceptionally high for a centre-back who hadn't played that even that much for them.
And it seemed exceptionally high for Celtic to be paying $3.5 million for that.
Yeah.
So even that aspect of the whole deal kind of seemed slightly odd. But one thing about the Torino deal was that they were meant to be selling their Serbian centre-back to Napoli, and Napoli were meant to be selling their, don't know what nationality is, the African centre-back, Koulibaly, maybe, to Chelsea. They were meant to be interested. So I don't know if that whole chain kind of broke down, or if Torino actually sold that guy in the end.
It probably isn't great listening for people right now as I'm scrolling through.
The guy who maybe might have been. There was a guy who I think might have been maybe going somewhere from one club to another. You sound like my dad.
Yeah.
That's how my dad talks. You're trying to put things together. Remember that guy, you know, used to play for the other team. Oh, aye, yeah, him.
But yeah, the Simunovic deal. The weird thing I found about the Simunovic deal was that. There's a quote from someone saying that he's discussing his terms in Turin,
mm-hmm.
which seems to me odd. I would have assumed that would have already been discussed prior to him getting on
the plane. Yeah, if you're going to go all the way to Turin, you'd have agreed all the terms in advance and then jumped on a plane.
So that kind of seemed pretty odd to begin with, to us.
The other thing about him of late.
Yeah.
He's been doing a lot of things like sticking up a tweet saying, calm down, everyone, I'm nearly back.
Yeah, yeah.
But even at the time, I remember thinking, actually, are you talking to other people or are you talking to Celtic fans?
Just a point about the Serbian boy from Torino.
Yeah.
That was held up today due to a bomb scare in an airport that was delayed. And apparently, just about half an hour ago, he signed for Napoli.
Right. So
in short, the Simunovic deal is back on.
Do you remember that transfer window where everybody went to bed at midnight thinking we'd sign nobody, and you woke up the next morning, we'd sign Michael Gray from Sunderland?
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And then Martin O'Neill never played him.
Those are kind of deals that I never understand why people seem to be like happy or satisfied by getting someone in like that. When we bought Gaudette, was it Gaudette and Skepovic on the same day, basically?
We've been trying to sign Skepovic for like 3 days.
Exactly.
And then, like, with an hour and a half to go, we bring in Gaudette, and then, remember, there was a whole thing about the Skepovic paperwork was dead late, and it wasn't sure if it was going to go through or not, and then eventually it did go through. But you just got the impression that, oh, we've come this far, we can't pull out, seemed to be the thing.
Yeah.
And just some deals you just kind of... There needs to be a kind of logic to a deal. Like, there needs to be, like, a hole in a squad that... You know, getting in Gaudette, we did need a kind of target man striker to play off from. But then to buy another one was just kind of... Anyway, I'm kind of rambling here. Back to the actual players we bought. Gamboa, the right back, actually think is a pretty clever deal by Celtic. Because I've seen a few people say, ah, well, he can't get in a West Brom team. But obviously... The fact that he isn't playing for a fairly mediocre team means very little when the new manager of that team plays a completely different style to how Gamboa would play. Like, Stoke Pulis had four 6-foot-plus centre-backs playing without them, you know, kind of going over the halfway line at all.
Yep.
So that's his style of play, and that's fair enough. Leicester won a league like that. But Gamboa doesn't play like that. Gamboa's up and down, in the same way that, you know, Rosenberg replaced Lustig with Gamboa, and Lustig 4 years ago was doing that up and down thing.
Yep.
So the fact that he isn't getting in at West Brom means absolutely nothing. It seems to me to be a pretty... An example of football's wastage, where you bring in managers that don't suit the original players that you've recruited. And it's a pretty good deal to get them for very little.
But when you're in the English Premiership with the money they've got, you can afford to, if it doesn't work out, we'll just punt them.
Yep.
And getting back to my Sky deadline day, there's almost a part of me that wonders whether... When Sky are sitting down negotiating the next TV contract with the English Premiership, there's almost a part of me wonders whether genuinely there is a discussion of you will be spending this money. We're not happy that Pep Guardiola's not in the English Premiership when he's by far the best manager, so we will be expecting one of the clubs to bring him in as a manager. There is a part of me that's got to the point where when you're talking about the money they're putting into the game, they would have the... I wouldn't be surprised if that's the type of conversations they're having.
If we had freed up any more players, say, in the middle of a pitch, would you have imagined that we would have spent money there? Do you think there were targets that we were looking at in the last, say, week or two?
I would be surprised if that's not an area of the park that we were looking at, or had been looking at. You know, although we've just discussed, if we actually talk about what Brendan Rodgers' first choice team is, he's got probably Saturday was closest to his first choice team of De Vries now in goal, so one of his signings is the goalkeeper. Then he's got Tierney on the left, and he had Sviatchenko and Toure in the middle with Lustig, so that Lustig then moves across and you do that 3-4 thing. If you then put in Gamboa, then actually what he's got is Tierney on the left, Gamboa on the right, and if he's wanting to play a four, and then that gives him Toure, Sviatchenko, Boyata, Lustig and Simonovic as the options for the two centre-half positions. Yep. In the final part of the pitch, you've got Griffiths and Dembele, one of the two of them. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Sinclair, Roberts and Forrest. He could even play Sinclair, Roberts and Forrest in a three behind Griffiths or Dembele.
Yeah.
With Sinclair in the middle of the three if he wanted. So then you're looking at the positions behind. And so you've also got the option in an SPL setup anyway of Rogic as well getting chucked into that mix of playing behind. So you've got Dembele or Griffiths for the central position. And then you've got Sinclair, Forrest, Roberts, Rogic. Those four.
Yeah, yeah.
So that then really leaves the two positions behind them.
Yeah.
And if you look at what he's alternating with, it's Beaton, Brown and McGregor for those two positions.
Yeah. And I think to be honest, there's a really legitimate concern about them. Is it Brown has been having... It's had the best start to the season, or best little period for Celtic that I can remember him having, up until Beaton played alongside him in Israel. And you would imagine if you were then to, you know, swap Beaton for McGregor, that seems to look like a fairly weak,
yeah,
you know, defensive midfield partnership.
I mean, did you see much of the Aberdeen game on Saturday?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Brown looked like someone who was still knackered from a midweek game.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He just seemed to be a bit short. I mean, the whole team at times looked a bit like that, but I thought, yeah, Brown in particular looked.
Yeah.
And that's disconcerting.
Yeah. But, yeah, but to be honest, the SPFL is so weak that you could rest players, you know, rest anyone basically to keep them fresh for these Champions League games.
I mean, if you look at what we've just discussed there, you've got Tierney and Izaguirre can deputise for Tierney. We've just discussed that in the two centre half positions, we've actually got five people who you could pair them.
Or six. O'Connell as well.
Oh, O'Connell, yeah, I forgot about O'Connell. So you've got people that could go in there, and then you've got, on the right-back position, we've just discussed Gamboa, Janko, and Lustig can go out there, as well as being in the middle. So you've got sufficient cover there in the SPL that's all fine. Up front, you've got Griffiths and Dembele, sufficient cover between the two of them. And then we've just discussed in the positions, you've got Roberts, Sinclair. So the only bit where you've not got fantastic... Well, SPL, I would suggest, you getting back to your point, SPL you could afford to then drop in, because we've not discussed Christie in the four up front, the four forward-going players.
Yeah.
But in those two positions, I suppose at SPL level, you could drop in one of Armstrong and Henderson.
Yeah.
To go in alongside, I wouldn't be so comfortable with a McGregor and Henderson too, but Henderson next to Beaton, Henderson next to Brown,
yeah,
McGregor next to Beaton, McGregor next to Brown, Armstrong next to Beaton. So in SPL, I suppose people's big concern is those two players are really important in Champions League level.
Yeah, but they don't play that well together.
Yeah, when I say those two players, I mean those two positions are really important.
Sorry.
At Champions League level. That would be people's concerns.
Yeah. I'd also have a concern that, and I think we were talking about it a wee bit in the Player of the Year chat we had about, three, 4 weeks ago.
Yep.
Was that people running and the kind of distances and how much ground they're covering. And the seasons that we were playing well with Lennon in the Champions League, Mulgrew was doing a lot of running, it's like covering about 14 kilometres a game or something. We had O'Legley as well. We had Brown. We're playing very good teams and they weren't going through us. We're playing Benfica, Spartak, Barcelona, and they weren't giving up very many chances. They weren't exposing the back four. The players that we have just now, like, the front players, so if you have to play that kind of one attacking midfielder in front of two more defensive ones, none of our central attacking midfielders do that much running. Maybe with the exception of Armstrong.
Yep.
And then behind, okay, Brown covers ground and Beaton will probably be with him. I would assume, maybe I'm wrong, and they don't really complement each other very well.
And I do wonder in terms of some of the unhappiness that I've seen with some fans online, and it seems to be, I think it's the nature of social media, it's got worse for being a bit whingy, but it does seem to be, if you're coming out and saying, actually, we've signed six players, five who are first team players, I'm pretty happy with that window. Anybody, I mean, I've not really made any comment online about it, but I have noticed those people who've made those sorts of comments, the people who disagree have been quite vitriolic in their, oh, you're just a bored apologist.
Yeah.
I think all this chat of the club making £25-30 million, amongst some people there has been an expectation that we would then go and sign a £5-10 million player as a consequence.
Yeah, but I think what you're saying about buying the players earlier, I don't think that would be the case, that kind of vitriol or annoyance, had we signed Sinclair an hour ago.
No. I mean, that's
and
the thing.
Signed him before the Israeli games.
And to be honest, I said to yourself, Jack and Lackymore, after the Player of the Year chat, that personally, I wouldn't have signed Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think they were, for the money, I think they could have been better options than Sinclair. But Celtic wanted Sinclair, and we bought him before the two Israeli games, the most important games of the season. We've now qualified, partly as a consequence. So, you know, that's a positive from the club, that they spent, what, 3.5, possibly going to 4.5, prior to those qualification games.
Yep. And the only criticisms I would maybe have is the transfer. Getting back to my point of, it's the final sales pitch for Sky subscriptions. But it is a sales tool. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's a sales tool, and I can imagine not wanting to decry any accountants listening to this. But many accountants I have known just don't get the ethereal nature of marketing and just like the intangible bit of sales and marketing. And there is a part of me thinks maybe we should have held off the Gamboa thing until today.
Uh-huh.
Just to announce it. Because the final day of the transfer window is as much part of show business as it is the necessity of signing footballers. And do you think there's any merit in doing things like that just to keep fans happy that they get a final day signing?
I'm just going to contradict your point. No. I'm with the accountants, to be honest. I'm with the accountants.
No, I mean... I'm not... I'm actually just saying, if you do your business and get the players in and you get a stronger squad, then that's all you're looking for. But at the same time, I understand people live in the world of they get hyped up on the final day of the transfer window. You know, be a bit like if you desperately wanted something for Christmas,
yeah,
and your mum and you know that you know a joint birthday stroke Christmas, you know, and it was far too yeah. much money, and your mum and dad agreed, okay, you can have it as a joint birthday Christmas present. We'll give you it now for whatever, you know, got it early, and then you get round to Christmas, and you're even though you knew in advance, you're still disappointed yeah. that you only get a bar of chocolate for your Christmas.
Yeah, but that's just when, yeah, we're just now discussing kind of simplistic fan mentality, which isn't to say that fans are simplistic, but just that kind of, that very kind of simplistic mentality of wanting something, blah, 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 blah. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you buy them.
It's like, I remember when you and I think Hullboy did a podcast when we signed maybe Robbie Keane, or possibly it was Eddie and Hullboy, I can't remember. Anyway, and I think you were discussing about how Celtic got kind of an hour of publicity in Sky Sports.
But to me, it doesn't really matter whether or not, you know, we get that. I'm back with the accountants. I don't see the kind of quantifiable kind of benefit that gives us. We're now completely digressing. We're going off on
a tangent. No, because there is a benefit. I tell you what the benefit is. The benefit yeah. is we live in a sales world. We live in a world where that type of thing is what impresses people. People, you know, like I was on tonight discussing with someone and I mentioned six players and somebody came back and said, no, we've only signed five and blah, blah, blah. They'd forgotten about Ayer because Ayer was signed so long ago in the window.
Well, maybe if your point is, then maybe it makes it easier for the board or it's a positive for the board. Yeah, then fair enough.
Yeah, well, my point is just the salesmanship of football. And do you know what?
Yeah.
If, like anything to do with fickle football fans, if we win our next competitive domestic game and draw our next competitive European game,
yeah,
the people who are currently online not happy because we've not signed the £10 million player they were hoping for,
yeah,
will have completely forgotten about it. I suppose it then gets back to the more pertinent part of that question is, do you think Celtic should have gone out and spent more money in the transfer window? In terms of not... I'm not meaning like they should have bought more players, or maybe one more player. Do you think Celtic should have been buying a £5-6 million player following qualification for the Champions League? Because I think that's the gist of what some people are not uh-huh. happy about.
Yeah. This is also partly a problem with how much the English are spending just now, that we're seeing, you know, almost every transfer you see is now going for like 80 million plus, whereas our kind of economy hasn't changed at all.
Yep.
And so I think there's a little bit of a kind of follow on from that.
But I wouldn't. I do think. I would like, had we have found someone who kind of fit our profile, who we could. I know people are sick of this just now, but if we had found someone with like sell on value. I remember. What was it on Sunday? Fergus talking about. Did you listen to the hour?
I did. The only bit I disagreed with was when Fergus said it was ridiculous that Rangers weren't kept in the top flight. That was the only bit of his whole interview that I disagreed with.
Well, one of the points he was making was the value of players, and he was kind of outlining that if a player has sell-on value, then the club should be able to, should be willing to, you know, kind of invest in that player,
mm-hmm.
knowing that you have the security that it's unlikely that it's going to drop in value.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whereas if you were to buy a 29-year-old or 28-year-old, you know, a large investment in that player, you're going to be losing money. And he made the point about the Marta O'Neill Seville team, that we invested a lot, but at some point, all of these guys were buying players for £6 million who are 28, 29. And at some point, they're leaving in Bosmans, and you have to invest in a new team, and you don't have any money left because you haven't sold any of those players.
Yep.
And although he didn't personally make this point, it's true that we didn't receive a fee for all but one of the players who started in Seville. Petrov was the only one. And basically, because he agreed to renew his contract,
yep,
and then sold. So, personally, you can kind of simplify it by saying, oh, it's, you're calling for speculate to accumulate. But every single transfer is a gamble. But if you invest in the right places and at the right age groups, then that gamble becomes much less. So I do think, although I think this transfer window, as I said at the start, is fine, I would have liked to have seen a wee bit more quality, a little bit kind of maybe going back. I always go on about Argentina and Uruguay, blah, blah, blah. So everyone kind of knows that's what I'm getting at. But no, also going Croatia, Serbia, Romania, looking at these markets that will have high resale values and looking at who are the next stars coming out of these markets. Like the boy who is gone to Juventus, Piazza, Marco Piazza, he scored a hat-trick against us from left midfield.
Mm-hmm.
18 months ago. he had, I think he was 18 or 19. Now, it's pretty obvious that there's a talent there.
Yep.
He was playing for Croatia in the European Championships. The other boy, there was Koric as well. Now, apparently, we were interested in Koric. We bought Simunovic from that team.
Yeah.
Hey, cool. But we should... This should be a kind of regular thing, that we should be looking at markets that are regularly producing players, finding the best players from these markets, and if we can supplement that with clever little signings like getting Gamboa due to West Brom not needing him anymore, getting De Vries in, who matches Rodgers' kind of style of play from the back. Dembele is another clever signing. That'd be perfect. That'd be perfect.
Well, the only thing I suppose you could argue is that Dembele, not in terms of your hidden gem, but yet Dembele does fall into that add value point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really clever signing. It reminded me, I won't be the only one to say this, but it was like the Ledley and Matthews signings. That you look in the Championship, who can you get on a Bosman? Who's the kind of best Bosman players that are under, say, 24 in a Championship? You bring them up to Scotland, they're good quality players, and you get, you know, good service from them, and at the end, because they're young and they had a previously good reputation in England, you can then sell them.
Yeah. Yeah, so I suppose you could argue, if you look at our signings, Dembele is one that fits that criteria. You might also argue that Ayer.
Yeah.
I mean, it all depends. It's odd because obviously he's been playing first team football in Norway. He's been playing in midfield. He's played attacking midfield and holding midfield. And then he has, in the handful of games that he's played under Brendan Rodgers, he's played as a centre-half, and but the Norwegian press are talking about him being the second best prospect that they've got and had for the last 10, 15 years. So you'd like to think that maybe now that things have settled down, we are back at, on, you know, we're top, back top of the league. So things have settled down domestically, that he might start getting a chance.
Yep.
You know, in the home games against Kilmarnock and the like that are coming up.
Yeah.
And we might start to see how, in the League Cup games, we might start to see how he develops.
Yeah. I think it will also be interesting to see how Nesbitt gets on at Morton.
Yeah.
Whenever I watch Aidan Nesbitt, I always think he looks such a classy, composed player. And also, my ideal would be, as I was saying to you before, kind of recruiting in those markets, looking for clever little deals where we can get players who are kind of being undervalued. And but also, instead of kind of clogging up the squad with, say, £1.5 million players, having some spaces for our youth players to be coming through. So that if Chifchi, he might play, what, 7 to 12 games a season?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it was possible, and before we had much more than just 3 centre-forwards, before we were having like 5 and 6, if we can kind of free up some spaces so that Aitchison can come in for a few games, you know, coming on as a substitute whilst he's playing in the development squad. Whenever I watch the younger teams, there's a kid called Mikey Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's about 17, who also looks very good. That'd be great for, make sure that our signings are kind of content, you know, like Mackay Stephen and whatever. I think it'd be much better for development to be given, you know, the 20 minutes at the end of a game when we're 3-0 up to a 17-year-old kid who looks exceptional in the development squad.
Well, there's two...
It would also be cheaper.
Yeah, and there's two parts of that. I mean, Ronnie Dyla went into, I think, every one of his windows looking for a left-back and didn't get one. You know, I remember hearing there was two occasions where he was raging that he didn't get a left-back. Tierney now is our first choice left back.
Yeah.
If Ronnie Dyer got what he wanted, which if we'd signed a £3 million left back, I'm sure plenty of people would have been delighted that we'd gone and done that.
Exactly.
Kieran Tierney now wouldn't be playing now. And the other thing I keep hearing is how much everybody's going on about Ralston, the right back, is a fantastic talent. And it is a sort of one area where I think if you run a club like Celtic, and this isn't a defence of the board, it's just a statement of fact, I think you can't win. Because Celtic fans will bemoan, you know, I hear Celtic fans saying, we should never have let, you know, we should have stuck with McGinn longer. You know, McGinn at Aberdeen. We should have stuck with Niall McGinn longer. Right. Or McCarthy, that we were allegedly interested in the transfer window. We should have signed him from Hamilton. But do you know what? The fans wouldn't have been happy if we'd gone and signed McCarthy, or many fans wouldn't have been happy if we'd gone and signed McCarthy when we did, because he wasn't a star. And fans will bemoan that we've not signed people, and they'll also, and McGinn wasn't good enough at the time at Celtic, because there was people ahead of him.
Uh-huh.
Equally, your point again, when Chad Arie was playing for Celtic, Would we have been better just sticking with Paul Caddis and seeing if he could have become a first-team Celtic player?
Yeah. And it's almost as though you have to be able to... The people who are making these decisions have to be able to realise, or they have to know how big a difference signing this player is going to be. If we have a budget, say, every season of spending about £6-7 million,
yeah,
and we have a 21-year-old Darren O'Day.
Is it worth using, say, a third of that budget to buy Leuvens, then to buy Højveld, to buy blah, blah, blah? There's about four or five mediocre centre-backs who've basically got to the level. O'Day was already playing. He was superb away in the San Siro. And he's basically had a similar career to those guys,
where
their level is championship club. And yet, we probably spent about £6 million in a series of centre-backs so that O'Day was always going to be, say, our third or fourth choice. Now, you could say the same is happening with O'Connell, who might reach that same standard. And we have...
Boyata, Simunovic, Ambrose in his way. And is Boyata that much of... Well, is he a better centre-back than O'Connell?
And you know, I saw a lot of people... And again, it was sort of taking that attitude of, if Torino are interested in Simunovic, he must be a decent player. He's hardly had a chance with us. Why are we letting him go? Well, you know, maybe Brendan Rodgers was saying the exact same thing as you, which is, do you know what? From what I've seen on the training ground or the videos, whatever, there's virtually no difference in O'Connell and Simunovic. So if we can get £3 million in for Simunovic, that's a decent bit of business, because I've now got, as we've just discussed, six centre, and that wasn't including Effie Ambrose. I've got six centre halves for two positions, and I like to see young players coming through. I'd rather we got £3 million back into the budget and get rid of Simunovic and you know, because again, getting back to players from certain countries can achieve a certain price, and if O'Connell and Simunovic are of the same standard.
Yeah.
Simunovic is a Croatian player, since they are one of the markets just now that people perceive there's talent coming from. We can get £3 million from Simunovic and we couldn't get it for O'Connell.
Yeah.
So I suppose you're right.
Here's an example. For example, wouldn't it be good if Ralston had an opportunity instead of Janko?
Yeah.
And Janko's just gone to Barnsley.
Has he?
Yep. Official.
You're just on the ball, minutes. You are.
These are my contacts. The Barnsley official Twitter feed that's just been tweeted up there.
So he's on loan, is he? Or sold?
Boom, boom, boom. I'll just check. I should have done my best or worst Jim White impression there.
Breaking news, Harry.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, covering me gravy.
I don't know if...
Here's their website.
I apologise. Everyone listening to this have been terrible. Just been scrolling around on the internet for half the time looking for Serbians moving. He's on loan until the end of the season. Okay.
Well, there you go. That actually is... So what that's saying is that Brendan Rodgers has tried him, looked at him, doesn't really fancy him. So we now have Lustig and Gamboa interchangeable on the right, and maybe Ralston might get some game time.
Yeah.
That's better.
It's a positive.
Yeah. So that's the transfer window. Very quickly, what did you make of the game on Saturday?
The Aberdeen game?
Yeah.
When I was watching it, you know what struck me when... can you remember when Rodgers was in the box at Tynecastle speaking after the game? To, I think it was Sky Sports, maybe. And I think one of the first things he said was that, well, to be honest, it wasn't a very good game, but we've won. And he's saying, the standard of football wasn't great today from the teams, but, you know, start of the season. And then and at the time I was thinking, that's probably as good a standard as we're going to see this season.
Yep.
And then when I watched the first half hour of the Aberdeen game, and they were packed into the kind of defending, you know, from even behind the halfway line,
yep.
The whole team was compact. And we were just knocking it about, then went 1-0 up, they barely changed, we're knocking it about. And it just kind of struck me that how weak the SPFL is. And that I was also thinking, how are the kind of data guys, or his, Chris Davies, how is he going to be doing scouting reports on these teams about how these teams are going to be, you know, damaging us when, you know, essentially what John Collins was saying is correct, although he shouldn't have said it in public, that these teams, they don't challenge us.
Mm-hmm. People misunderstood that statement. When we then go and lose to somebody and people say, oh, see, they do challenge us. No, I mean, my impression on Saturday, I actually sent a text to someone on the way home saying Radio Scotland were at a different game to me on Saturday. Because Radio Scotland were talking about Aberdeen playing three at the back and also talking about the fact that there was never any point in the game where it wasn't obvious Celtic were going to win. And I thought, well, actually, it looked to me like in the first 20 minutes, Aberdeen played five at the back because it was a flat five.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, when we were doing too much farting around, it looked like if there was... Although they didn't actually have a chance where they really looked like they were going to score, they were looking more likely to score at 2-1 than to make it 2-each than we were to make it 3-1. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really struck me at two points in the game, the point where you said at 1-0 and we just started passing it back with some forwards at the back.
Yeah.
And then at 2-1, when De Vries was getting the ball and we were doing the thing of Sviatchenko and Toure were in their left back and right back positions, you know, the way you would line up your Sabutio team. And Brown and Beaton were going to the two corners of the D. It looked to me, one of the things that struck me is that in the interviews so far, Brendan Rodgers have been saying, we've not been working with the players tactically. We've only been working on the players' mentality for the Champions League games.
Yeah.
And actually what it looked like to me was, that's the case. Now that we were in the Champions League, the Friday just passed was the first day that the team had then worked on something different. And we were practising it in the game. It just looked like, well, we all tried this yesterday. Let's see if it works in a game.
Yeah.
The point I'm making is, it looked like we were practicing something that the players didn't quite understand what they were supposed to be doing yet.
Yeah.
Because Brendan Rodgers had to take one of them. It was Sviatchenko at one point with a foul. He had to pull Sviatchenko aside because Aberdeen were then just pushing three players up on those four sitting out wide. It was almost a Brendan Rodgers to say, just to let you know, see when the opposition get three players, you can't keep doing this four thing that we practiced yesterday. All right, boss.
Yeah.
So I thought it was an odd game. I thought it was a game where it patches. Before we'd absolutely put the game out of sight, I felt it in patches we were playing as if we knew the game was won and we're going through a training session.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of the problems is going to be, and especially this year with the Champions League being so strong, is that there's almost no intermediate.
Like Rangers are nothing. Aberdeen and Hearts
aren't good enough to play in the Europa League. There's almost no intermediate, and Rodgers likes to play, you know, possession football. Like even when he was at Swansea and he'd be going away to say Tottenham or Liverpool, they would be trying to hold on to the ball and kind of dominate possession, even when they're playing against better players. But that can't happen, really, against Barcelona and City.
But you're right, just as you're saying that, our biggest challenge this season is it's going to be feast or famine. I mean, we've played from the brief bits I've seen, Rangers are not as good as Hearts and Aberdeen. So we've already played
the two best teams.
We are dramatically better than them, and then we're going to go into the Champions League and play teams who are dramatically better than us. So it's not even as if we're getting a handful of domestic games where it's slightly different. I also felt already the publicity around the pace of our forward three, four players impacted on the way McInnes fielded his team on Saturday. He went and played this five at the back because he didn't want ripped apart. So it will be a challenge.
I can imagine it being quite frustrating as well for Rodgers,
because even had we have got, say, we remember the penultimate group that we almost got, it was like Kiev, Napoli and Benfica. And we could have got that group, and it would have been such a kind of nicer kind of introduction into the Champions League for him and for us as well,
that he could have
attempted to have dominated possession against, say, Kiev, definitely. Even if player for player we might not be yet, you know, kind of at a Champions League standard, he would have probably tried it. But against Barcelona, with their system, and with Guardiola's Man City, you know, it's not going to happen.
No.
So
I'm sort of looking.
It's going to be interesting.
I'm sort of looking at this Champions League. I'm looking at this season in terms of, and maybe we won't do this, but my hope is that this season is we brought in six players, five who are first team players. We play Champions League football against people who are so much better than us, and we make a lot of money. And at best, we finish third, but more likely we finish fourth, but we've had some experience against two of those teams. You wouldn't be surprised if they were in this, if two of those teams were in the semi-finals. Right?
Yeah.
So my gut feel when the draw was made was, right, okay, we've got some players in, the squad's going to be better coming out of the transfer window than it was at the end of last season. We've got a better manager in, the team's playing better football, we're going to get some Champions League experience and Champions League money. We strengthen again in January, get another player in so that we come out of January better than we go into January, and let's have a better crack at finishing hoping for second or third in next season's Champions League. I might be, you know, wish my life away, but that's the sort of thought process that I had when I saw the group that we got. Very quickly, before we go on, the only other sort of major thing in relation to, you're a technical type person. What do you think of the devil's in the detail, and the detail's just starting to come out, but what do you think of the changes to Champions League, European coefficients, etc., that have been starting to come through?
The Italians will be delighted. That's my thought. It's obvious. I think even the kind of English response kind of matched ours for once, in that it was kind of depressing. I think Porto absolutely tanned the Roma. Roma came out maybe second or third in Serie A, third again, and they beat them 3-0 in Rome. And now Italy are going to have two further automatic places. They're going to have four places. It seems to me like that who kind of votes for this? I didn't understand the kind of structure of UEFA deciding these things.
Well, it's basically the wealthier clubs in some of the bits of Europe want to make sure that they get more money.
Yeah, I understand that, but the actual process of when these things are decided...
Oh, I think...
What's the kind of voting process of it?
Well, I think the thought process is, and if you don't do it, we're going to set up our own thing because the TV companies would follow us to do it. So your options are work out a best, worst-case scenario compromise of Weirovsky, or the threat of Weirovsky.
I think the that kind of threat is pretty much overblown, because they're in a pretty comfortable position just now. The English, Spanish and German teams have been getting, say, four teams in every year, basically, anyway. I don't see how these changes are going to benefit them that much. So, it seems a wee bit strange.
My gut feel in terms of the way the English treat the Europa League, it means they can ignore the Europa League. Because you know, there's been a point of the English risking losing a Champions League spot because they've been ignoring it. So it means they can ignore it properly now because it has no impact on whether they're three or four Champions League teams.
Yeah.
And also means they don't have far out. The only positive from a Celtic perspective was we no longer are dragged down by the Scottish coefficient once we're in the Champions League. And we will get extra points for being in the for being a former European Cup winner.
Yeah.
There's also been less of a percentage is based on market pool, and a higher percentage is just based on kind of fixed prize money. And for people who are not sure what a TV market pool is that UEFA calculates how much the TV contracts for each country contribute, and then part of their prize money, they then kind of siphon off that contribution that the country's made to the advertising revenue and give that back to countries, to clubs from that country. So, for instance, I think 2 years ago, Basel got to the last 16 and Roma were knocked out in the group stage. Whereas the TV market pool for Italy meant that Roma were given something like 28 million euros in their TV market pool, whereas Basel were given three.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that the overall total, even including the extra prize money that Basel had won, and, you know, they'd obviously had a better performance, they received something like 60% less than Roma. So, from that perspective, I think
the contribution we get, the last time we were in a Champions League, was something like 8 million euro, 9 million euro, around there.
Yep.
So, if it was based more on kind of sporting meritocracy, I think it would be a positive for us. It's
fair anyway. It'd be the equivalent of, you know, Djokovic beating Roderick in the US Open, but Roderick getting more prize money from the ATP because he's American and Djokovic is Serbian. It's ludicrous that there's prize money not based on sporting meritocracy. But
yep.
So, you know, we get 8 million euro from UEFA for our market pool, and the English clubs get 30 odd million, even though it's a combined British TV contract, which is another kind of ludicrous point to it.
So, yeah, it isn't a complete eradication of that, but they're kind of diminishing it a bit. So that's a slight positive to it. But to be honest, the four
teams for the top four leagues is...
It's a negative. It's a negative.
Yeah, I suppose it's just part of the world we live in. That in terms of football, that for some time now the rich have been looking to try and suck more money into themselves. And I think in terms of the non-English countries that are looking at this, it's as much to do with being peed off that Barcelona can now get outbid for a player by Stoke. And it's about trying, where can we find an extra 5 million, 10 million euros here or there? It's by getting better guarantees of, you know, in terms of tour league, better guarantees of money. And but they're never going to catch the English because they're not in the English Premiership, and that's where the money is.
Yeah.
And I'd also just make one other point, is that the peripheral European countries have been so inactive in combating this. Like, the SFA, the Dutch FA, the Portuguese, Turks, Russians should have really have, you know, been fighting this and to be putting a kind of joint effort together. Because they have, you know, obviously much more countries than the four countries.
Yeah.
And so what would be the major countries' kind of proposal, that they're to start their own equivalent of a Champions League? Well, our countries have the benefit of that if we're staying in UEFA, we have the positive that then we have all the history behind us. So they could start off, say, Europa Super Cup or whatever it's called. But do you really think that Real Madrid want to leave all that history behind?
They could buy their history into the new competition.
I think, yeah.
I know, I get your point. I get your point. I mean, I think all of this stuff is still to come. I mean, there was something that's hardly been commented on, was something that came out yesterday, which is they're going to be changing the Champions League to 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock kickoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, in theory, oh, well, you see, we're going to do it because when the Europa League, the first season of Europa League, they were going to do it based on time zones. And that's not a problem because I understand, you know, there are some Russian time zones where they're kicking off at 10, 11 o'clock at night. So that's not a problem. But it doesn't stay like that, because if Celtic are playing Champions League football and four English teams are playing Champions League football in the British TV pool, not all five of them are going to kick off at 8 o'clock at night.
No.
And so you'll have the ridiculous situation of, and I know which one of the clubs will end up having to get the raw end of the deal, but you'll have the ridiculous, and it's all for TV viewers, but the ridiculous situation of, if you work until 5:30 in Scotland, you could be working in Glasgow City Centre, which is 2 miles from Celtic Park, finishing work at 5:30. It is impossible for you to get there for kickoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never mind people who are travelling, you know.
Yeah.
From the East Coast and from, you know, out with the Glasgow.
So it's the sort of, you know, to use the other terminology, it's the mission creep of it. It's all the, everything is moving one step to the next step to the next step.
Yeah, but, and all of our FAs are doing absolutely nothing about it.
No, because, yeah, nobody wants to rock the boat. Anyway, enough of this. So the transfer window has slammed shut, but Celtic's neat in the window last night. So there was no fingers caught in the window for Celtic, apart from Janko going to Barnsley.
breaking,
yes. Do you know what? The amount of little publicity that will come around that, there will be some people listening to this podcast in 3 days' time who'll find out that Janko's gone to Barnsley. Do you know the other thing I always find odd about the transfer window? It always happens, obviously it happens at the end of August, but the consequence of it is you sign a player who then doesn't play for nearly 2 weeks because of international football.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's by the by. I will leave it, and I'll say Mark Cooper. Thanks very much.
No worries. Brilliant.
I hope you enjoyed that chat with young Mark Cooper and myself.
He's down in the southern hemisphere whipping his dress off. I'm getting my tie off. Transfer window has slammed shut. I'm sure you heard the noise in the background there. Bang, gone. Anyway, we can now get on with looking forward to our next big competitive game, which is, of course, away to Barcelona in the Champions League. Before all that, I have previously promised you that I would reveal how you all voted in the Celtic Underground Champions League team at the 200th podcast as we approach our 300th podcast. It's fit and proper that we now reveal that as we approach our new Champions League campaign, and that'll be done in the next podcast. Talking of podcasts, you see, we don't just hang this thing together like at By The Min or 20 Min Minute Celtic Podcast or any of the other Johnny Come Latelys. No. This is planned out. Talking of podcasts, we have some podcast recommendations from you, the listener. So, if you're into your short stuff like 20 Min Celts, then there is the weekly economics podcast from the New Economics Foundation, which is about 15 minutes long, according to Jim Higgins. So that's one. Also had quite a number of people recommending Freakonomics, which is looking at things, different topics from an economics background. Also, a few people have recommended Thinking Aloud, the Adam Buxton podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish, and of course there's been quite a bit of publicity recently about the, some people have referred to it as the British version of the serial, but it's Untold, the Daniel Morgan murder. Listen to a bit of it to take a few jumps. Anyway, there's some podcast recommendations. There'll be links to those on the site. I hope you're enjoying the new music that we're playing in the background. It started off with World Cup of Chris, which I'll stick on again at the end. And there is also myself being a telepath. Anyway, that was me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless.
Space Raiders.